Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Here is Thursday, September 21st, 2017. You're here to talk about week three of the NFL season. And joining me to do that is Dan Graziano of ESPN. Dan, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. How are you doing?
Fantastic. You're in studio.
Yes.
You sound wonderful. I can't ask for more in terms of audio quality. Meaning to have you on for a while. Happy to have you on now. Talk about week three of the NFL season. Really a very interesting week. Some teams who I think maybe people weren't expecting to be in a, you know, not playing for their lives, because anything can happen after 2 weeks of the year. It's a little too early to say that teams are playing for their season in week three, but there are some teams that are not necessarily playing for their season, but awful close if things don't go their way. And I think a team that you covered previously for ESPN before moving on to more national coverage were the New York Giants, a team who I don't think even pessimistic people would have expected the Giants would be 0-2 heading into a game with the Eagles in week three.
You know, all 3 years I covered them as a beat guy for ESPN, they started 0-2. And one of those years they were 0-6. This is 13, 14, and 15.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it is. They did not see this coming. After last year, they came in with a great deal of confidence this year. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about the team, the coaches, the players, and of course the fans. And I think there's a lot of shock coming off that Monday night game. Even after they lost in Dallas, people were mad. But I think people thought they would handle Detroit at home. So there's a lot of soul searching going on in East Rutherford this week.
Yeah, and it's not even that they lost. You know, it'd be one thing if they played a coast game and a couple breaks went against them. Like, they were outplayed in both those games quite comfortably. And it's one thing to do it to the Cowboys, you know, opening day of the year. But to have that happen at home, your home opener against the Lions. I mean, not that the Lions are a bad team. I think, you know, they're a playoff team last year. They look really good to start the season this year in a lot of ways. We'll get to them a little later, but just there wasn't really many points in that game where it looked like the Giants were as good as the Lions, let alone a team that should realistically be favored to win against them.
And I think that's part of the problem from the fan standpoint is, like, your worst nightmare is coming true. Like, if there's going to be a problem with this team, it's going to be the pass protection. It's going mm-hmm. to be, you know, and there it is on full display with John Gruden breaking it down after every single play. Eric Flowers getting smoked by Ezekiel Ansah over and over again. And so it's not just the losing, but it's like, oh my God, we were right when we were worried about what could sink the season. Here it is. It's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, let me ask you this. Let's start with this then. Because this is the same offensive line that was around last year.
Yep.
You know, granted, Bobby Hart is hurt, but, you know, he wasn't exactly – there are other problems besides Hart on the offensive line. It's not as if Bobby Hart is the difference between this being the Cowboys and the worst offensive line in football. So is the line worse than it was last year? I mean, what's different about this team through this 0-2 start than the team that we saw last year that was a playoff team?
Well, remember that last six games of the season, they didn't get to 20 points. It was not a dominant offensive team mm-hmm. To begin with. Averaged under 20 points for the season. I think the only other playoff team last year that averaged fewer points was Houston.
Yes.
So, you know, it wasn't they won with defense and, you know, a big play from Odell Beckham. The second Cowboys game last year, the home game against the Cowboys, a very low-scoring game. Beckham took a slant and went about 75 yards mm-hmm. in the third quarter, I believe it was, and that was all they needed. So the defense was so good and so locked down, excellent, and then they had Beckham. Now, obviously, they didn't have Beckham in the first game this year and didn't really have him in the second game.
Right.
You know, he's easing his way back in from injury. And they're missing a couple of key pieces on defense. That defense did not have injury issues last year, and Janoris Jenkins is an important piece for them that did not play against Detroit. And that definitely showed up. So not a lot of margin for error when you're not a high-scoring offensive team. And I think what's different this year is maybe we've seen, you know, no Odell the first two game and a half, whatever, and then Janoris Jenkins. And then on the offensive line, I think Eric Flowers' confidence is low.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's probably lower than it was a year ago. Not that it was ever sky high. But I think he's in a situation where the problems are kind of feeding onto themselves, kind of building on themselves, and I think we see them getting worse week to week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really fair. The health thing I brought up a couple of times on SportsCenter earlier this year, and I think it's a really important point to keep in mind, given that, you know, you think about that Jason Pierre-Paul injury late in the season. Sure, you know, that did hurt them, but most of the year they were really staggeringly healthy. And it's not even that, you know, you're losing Janoris Jenkins, but even Eli Apple doesn't look to be the same player he was last year, and there were some injury concerns with him in the preseason, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and a young player, too. I mean, obviously we saw Stafford look his way a couple times, as you would expect. You know, the one personnel change they made, they lost Jonathan Hankins in free agency. But the second-round pick, Dalvin Tomlinson, has been a real find for them up front mm-hmm. at defensive tackle. I talked to coaches with the Cowboys after they played them in the first game. So that kid's a really good player. So personnel-wise, if they can keep everybody on the field, they should be fine. But, you know, we see this year to year, right, in the NFL, all kinds of position groups. You know, I mean, like last year, the Atlanta Falcons had the same offensive line healthy for the entire year. Guess who's in the Super Bowl, right? I mean, this is, if that doesn't happen this year, then maybe that's where it falls apart for them. But, yeah, the Giants need to be better on offense because I think there's a sort of an inevitable, injury or health issue that the defense will encounter just by virtue of this being football. And you know, you're not going to get through two whole seasons fully healthy.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing that worried me about the Giants not addressing the offensive line this offseason and using the money they had, you know, to go after Brandon Marshall, to use their first-round pick on Evan Ingram, to really go after weapons for Eli Manning versus improving the offensive line, it's always contextual, right? Like, it's one thing if you're playing a division where you don't have a lot of good pass rushers, which, you know, the Cowboys don't really have a good pass rush. Washington's Ryan Kerrigan is pretty good. The Eagles have a very good pass rush altogether, which is doesn't bode well for them in this game, you would say. But for a team that was trying to win now, a team that's really had, you know, has a veteran quarterback, has a few veteran players, really trying to, you know, go after veterans, spend a lot of money, and try and win over the next couple of years, they're playing the AFC West this year. They're playing the best division of pass rushers in football. They're playing Khalil Mack. They're playing Von Miller. They are playing Justin Houston. And they're playing Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. So I don't understand how you can look at your schedule, knowing you're playing the AFC West years in advance, and say, oh, well, you know what? Eric Flowers has been a mess these past few years, but he'll probably get better. We'll figure it out. We don't need to even, you know, use one of our first few picks on an offensive lineman. We don't need to go after much depth besides DJ Fluker in free agency. Like, I don't, you know, it would have cost a lot of money in inflation, but it just seems like, given what they needed, given the personnel they already had, it just seems like the money they would have spent, even before Brandon Marshall's played these first two games and looked pretty bad, that money, even if it had been an overspend on an offensive lineman, just seems like it would have made more sense going back to April before we even get to the season beginning.
Yeah, the Giants are fairly set in their ways. I think that's probably as euphemistic a way as I can put it in terms of how they operate as a front office. Jerry Reese been there forever. They're doing business the way they always have. Now, the philosophy is we aren't going to spend premium high-end resources on guys that aren't premium high-end talent. Last year they spent big on defense. They thought Janoris Jenkins and Olivier Vernon and Damon Harrison were elite-level players that justified the expenditure. They did not see that with any offensive linemen this offseason, and I think they were right in that evaluation, right? I mean, we saw the contracts, the Riley Reefs and Mike Remmers of the world got. I think it's okay to sit there and say, we're not going to play at that level for those kinds of players. I think that's fair. Where I look at it is like Andrew Whitworth. Now, Andrew Whitworth got what, $15 million guaranteed from the Rams? They had to guarantee $2.5 million of next year's salary to get him out of Cincinnati. That seems like a wise expenditure for a win-now team, which I think you're absolutely right. The Giants have to view themselves as a win-now team. How long are the last year's free agents going to play at that level? You know, you've sort of stumbled into something here. You've gone from lose, lose, lose to 11-5, and now you have to you build on that, especially with a quarterback sort of late in his career as Eli Manning is. So that's the one I look at and go, that's a guy that I think would have looked real good on the left side right now for the Giants. They made the choice to invest, as you say, in more weapons, Brandon Marshall, Evan Ingram, because that was another issue they had last year on offense. Yeah. So it's a resource allocation thing. But, yes, leaning on Eric Flowers because he was a top 10 pick and being married to that evaluation from 2 years ago, which, by the way, no other team had on Eric Flowers, could end up costing them and should. I mean, if you spend the number 9 pick on a guy to play left tackle and he can't play, that you should pay for that. And that, as an organization, is where they are right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I agree with you. I think Whitworth would have been a logical fit for them. It just seems like it's easier to fill that second wideout spot when your first wideout is Odell Beckham than it is to fill, you know, an offensive line spot. So, yeah, if it had been Whitworth and maybe they waited, maybe they draft a wide receiver, maybe they, you know, they wait for the free agent market to kind of sift out and they get Jeremy Maclin or Eric Decker in July when those guys are getting cut. You can't necessarily predict those guys are going to get released, but you figure at least one of those guys is going to kind of shake free.
You could have got Terrell Pryor for $6 million.
Yeah.
I mean, they got $5 million for Marshall. I mean, so it's not the wide receiver market did not do. But remember, Marshall signed because the Jets cut him. So he signed before the market opened.
Sure.
So that was like he came to them. He didn't want to leave New York. He's still got post-career plans there. And they thought this is too good a deal for this kind of player. We got to spend it.
Yeah, in 3 weeks, it does not seem to be the deal they were hoping for. Do you make anything or make much of the Eli Manning, Ben McAdoo brouhaha this week when it came to that fourth down play?
No, because I think that you're dealing with grown-ups. I think when Ben McAdoo says what he says about Eli Manning in a press conference, it's Ben McAdoo taking an opportunity to give an honest answer. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, I've seen it written a couple places. Well, why didn't he do the same to Eric Flowers? You know, Eric Flowers and Eli Manning are at slightly different points in their career, right? I mean, that's 13 fair. Years difference, and certainly confidence issue. I don't think confidence is a problem for Eli Manning, whereas if you're coaching Eric Flowers right now, I think it's not unwise to think, hey, I got to be careful here. If I'm too hard with this guy, I could lose him. So I don't make anything of it. Knowing Eli Manning, knowing Ben McAdoo, I sincerely doubt Eli was bothered by it. Mm-hmm. I think that's the least of their problems.
So on the flip side of this matchup, certainly you're looking at the Eagles, and this is not necessarily a great matchup for the Giants in terms of the pass rush, but, and this is an incredibly big but given the last 2 weeks, if they can protect Eli Manning, the secondary of the Eagles could be very inviting given the injuries. Ronald Darby's out. Rodney McLeod, their starting safety's out. Jalen Watkins may be out. Corey Graham is questioned while he didn't practice with a hamstring injury this week. So it could be Russell Douglas, who was a rookie who looked very good last week, you know, in limited time coming in for those injured players, but he could be starting at corner perhaps. You could see Chris Maragos at safety, who's really a special teams guy. It seems like it could be a possible place for Odell Beckham if Odell Beckham is the Odell Beckham we know from the last couple of years.
Right, and obviously still working his way back from that ankle injury, though he's been practicing this week, and I would assume he's doing more than he did last week because he is making progress. So, yeah, I mean, you know, even if all those guys you name play out of their minds, at least they're thin back there. Mm-hmm. So, and the secondary was an area of concern for the Eagles to begin with, even when they had their full complement of guys. So, yes, and Eli Manning's not a guy that's always needed a lot of time in the pocket. I mean, he gets rid of the ball quickly. So if they can give him any time, then these guys can get downfield and certainly exploit some matchups in that Eagles secondary. But as you say, that's a big if. They could help Flowers on the left side with a tight end or a back and do some chipping. But as Ben McAdoo pointed out after the game the other night, they had already moved Justin Pugh over from left guard to right tackle because of the Bobby Hart injury. Can't help both tackles. Because now you got 7-8 guys covering 3 guys running routes, and there's not going to be anybody open to throw to. So that's the issue they're confronting in practice this week. How do they set themselves up best at tackle for this game? And I think if they can do that, then they should be able to attack the Eagles back there. But man, Brandon Graham and that crew up front, they're not going to make it easy. They're not getting any breaks, the Giants, this week in terms of the opposing pass rush. And I think you see the Eagles as a team that smells blood.
Other concern with the Eagles heading into this week is left guard. Their offensive line, pretty expensively assembled. They have free agents, of course, at right guard with Brandon Brooks. Jason Kelce is a pretty high-paid center. They're, I think, maybe the most expensive tackle combination in football. Not sure anymore, probably, but one of the top 5 in terms of expense with Jason Peters and Lane Johnson. The big hole was going to be left guard, where they were going to start Isaac Sumalo, and he's been a mess the first 2 weeks. And despite claims by Doug Peterson and Frank Reich that they were going to stick with him, it looks like Chance Warmack, the former Titans bust, is going to come in and play left guard for them. Is that just like a desperation thing, you think? Or, I mean, they did give him a 1-year extension. Does that stuff really matter in terms of how they value him?
I think this gets to kind of the point we were making before of the Eagles with an early season opportunity to do some real damage, to send the Giants to 0-3, to make the Giants 0-2 in the division, to make themselves 2-0 in the division. Mm-hmm. I think this is, from what I understand talking to people in Philadelphia, you know, it's not giving up on Sumalo. It's more about, this is a pretty big game. Even though it's a week 3 game, this is a real opportunity here to do some real damage to a Giants team that I think was, you know, probably a lot of people thought would be ahead of them, and to position themselves well going forward in the division race. So I think the sense is, the idea of which alignment gives us the best opportunity to win this game becomes paramount in a way that I think supersedes the big picture for them right now at that position.
I think Eric Flowers just rang my bell. Out of me consulting him on the podcast. I apologize.
It's all right. You open the door, you go right by him.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about on the podcast. I do agree with that. You know, I think about the Giants' schedule over the next 3 weeks. It's not easy. I mean, you're looking at, they're at Tampa next week. Tampa looks pretty good so far. They've played one game, but they look good. They're hosting the Chargers, who, the Chargers are the Chargers, but, I mean, certainly a competitive team. You don't know who's going to show up and who's going to show up in the fourth quarter, but a team that can give anybody fits if they're playing well. They're at Denver. Denver started 2-0. They look pretty great. And they're hosting Seattle before their bye. So, I mean, I don't know. If they start 0-3 and they still have those four games to come, at what point is it just a lost season? I mean, is this a must-win game, or is it just close to one?
0-3 is pretty tough to dig out of, statistically. Now, I will say this. The whole division has a rough schedule. You know, everybody's going, it seems like, to Denver, to Arizona, to Oakland. There's no question about that. So I don't think this is a year, and this was a preseason evaluation of mine. I don't think this is a year where the top teams in the NFC East get to 12 and 13 wins.
Right.
I think this is going to be a tight sort of white-knuckle race, and it's possible it could be one of those years, given the strengths of schedules for all these teams, the fact that they're constantly leaving the time zone, that they're going west so many times. It could be a year where 9 or 10 wins can win you this division. So I don't think 0-3 buries the Giants, but 0-3 stinks. I mean, like, 0-2, like, if you're sitting there, you worked all offseason, And now you're going, or a month into the season basically, before you win a game, you know, that starts to eat away at you, and then it starts to cause problems that are new that maybe not wouldn't have existed had you gotten off to the hot start. I mean, last year they lost the opener. They won the opener in Dallas, but then they lost. I think they lost their second game. But anyway, they weren't in a drastically different position at this point last year. They're one game out of first place. You know, if you win, everything starts to look better. You start to think, oh, well, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe Tampa has a bad game this week. Now that starts to look like a win. So I think psychologically for the team, I think it's a big game. Not that mathematically it would doom them to lose it, but I think in their minds, I think this is an important game to win.
One other thing about the Eagles, and then we'll move on. What's going on with their running back situation?
It's
already a mess.
You know, it's funny. LeGarrette Blount has this sort of switch that only activates when he's in New England, and otherwise he hasn't been that great an NFL player.
Yeah.
I think they want to get Wendell Smallwood more involved, and I think we've heard some rumblings out of there this week about Corey Clement possibly being more involved. Doug Peterson and that offensive staff recognize that the plan at running back hasn't worked. And they're not going to continue to just sort of bang their heads against the wall. They have options. Darren Sproles has been the most heavily featured guy, and I don't think they're comfortable with that. I think that Darren Sproles fits a role and is a very good player, had an amazing career, but I don't think that he's their feature back. So there are changes coming there to that rotation. Didn't run the ball much at all on Sunday to begin with, and I think they're going to have a hard time running it against the Giants. Most teams do. So we may not see the new plan come together on Sunday, but I think they're definitely looking at all the options in the run game there, and it might be that a guy who hasn't had a chance yet, like a Clement or a Smallwood, might get more run going forward.
Makes sense. A team that did beat the Giants, of course, on Monday night, the Detroit Lions, who are a little bit of a surprise at 2-0. They're facing the Atlanta Falcons, a little less surprising, if it's fair to say, at 2-0. But even given the Falcons win over the Packers on Sunday night, which looked really good, was a really impressive victory. I wonder if we would feel differently about this team and where they are and where they're going if Josh Bellamy doesn't drop a pass in the end zone with 21 seconds left in the game against the Bears in Week 1. I mean, are you fully on board with the Falcons look great and there's no hangover and there's no problem side of this equation, or do you think there's still some unanswered questions about them over the course of the rest of the season?
Well, the offense looked fantastic on Sunday against Green Bay, and I think that's what everybody's kind of hanging their hat on. There's so much of this NFL analysis and coverage is sort of rooted almost entirely in recency bias, and I think that, you know, they didn't look good in Week 1, and they were playing a Packers team that was incredibly banged up. I mean, Mike Daniels, bad loss for the Packers, and then obviously all those offensive weapons that got hurt in the game, so... But, you know, I think people saw the Falcons looking like last year's Falcons, and now, oh, it's going to be fine. Personnel-wise, they should be fine. But my question has been and continues to be, how smooth is the communication between Steve Sarkisian and Matt Ryan, and, you know, on game day? And I think that's the kind of play, because it was, you know, Kyle Shanahan was so completely in charge of this offense, and everything came so naturally in terms of the play calling and you know, the no-huddle stuff they would do and all that. And I think, you know, there have to be growing pains when you make any kind of switch there. Even if Steve Sarkisian is immensely talented as a play caller, there's going to have to be growing pains. This was a topic when I was at their camp back in August. You know, they were talking about what they were doing to try and speed up that learning curve in terms of the communication. So we will see. And again, that offensive line has to stay healthy, which it was all last year. That's a big thing. But on defense, you know, they have to stay deep and strong on that defensive line. And you already see injuries sitting in there with Beasley. And I think Courtney Upshaw is now in question for Sunday's game as well.
Yeah, Beasley's certainly the big one. He's out for about a month, it looks like, with a hamstring injury. Someone who I think was maybe a little overrated by his sack total, but did lead the league in sacks last year. And at some point, you get 15 sacks, you're doing pretty well, no matter how maybe lucky in some ways you are. Are you more surprised by the Lions then and their 2-0 start?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think the Lions are one of these teams we sort of expect to be something. You know, we expect them to be kind of average. We expect them to maybe tail off as the year goes along. We expect them to gack away the division to Green Bay as they did last year. You know, but so I think, yeah, they do surprise us when that. But, I mean, the pass rush, that's a big question for them. And it looked so good on Monday. But, you know, is it because the Giants are having such issues in protection, or are they really that good in the pass rush? Well, that's why we have to watch multiple games and make our conclusions as opposed to one. But, yeah, I think if they can get after the passer, then that becomes a fairly formidable team. I don't know if they have the kind of offense they're going to need to stay all year with Green Bay. And, again, we saw last year that they kind of barely didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I wonder how much of what we've seen from the Lions so far. And I feel like I'm criticizing the Lions and disparaging them. And maybe that's not fair. I think they are a little better than I expected. But, I mean, the Cardinals kind of self-destructed against them in week one. The Cardinals were winning that game. They were in a solid position. David Johnson was on the field, and then Johnson gets hurt. They start turning the ball over. They're a bit of a mess. And then they pick on Justin Bethel for two late touchdowns and end up winning pretty comfortably. And then I think they got a late turnover for a touchdown as well. And then the Giants, of course, I mean, they look like a mess. We just talked about them. And I feel bad taking something away from them, and I don't want to, but your schedule matters in terms of what kind of team you are, especially after two games. A lot of what we're seeing is just, we don't know how much of it is the Lions being good and the Giants and Cardinals maybe being bad. So I don't know where I am on them yet. Do you think that it's...
Yeah, I don't think you're being unfair. I think you're, you know, I think the, feel good about your numbers. You know, it's after what they were last year, I think it's fair to want to see more. You know, last year, the games they won, they were incredible at pulling out these fourth quarter miracles. And then they really did tail out as the season went along. And they were not the same team late in the season. Maybe they were the same team and just couldn't win the fourth quarter like they were. But I think, you know, I think they know what the offense wants to be. You know, the Jim Bob Cooter offense and Matthew Stafford operating it. I think they have an identity. I know they'd like to run the ball more. I think it's fair to say we want to see more from Ameer Abdullah as a featured back before we're sure. I think, you know, but 2-0 is 2-0. There they are. While they're putting themselves together, they're 2-0. They're the Carolina Panthers, Pittsburgh Steelers, teams that haven't played their best and are nonetheless 2-0. That's a heck of a lot better than being the Chargers, you know, who have played probably five or six very good quarters and are 0-2. So, yeah, oh, I think that's the I think it's fair to want to see more from the Lions.
So you think running the ball is kind of the next step for them in terms of, if we can see them run the ball, that'll be the thing, or maybe we should have a little more faith in them to close out games as opposed to kind of having those, requiring those fourth quarter comebacks?
And they closed it out with the run a little bit on Monday. You know, the first half I was thinking to myself, this Abdullah is never going to work. It's all east to west. He won't get downhill. And then as they did wear down the defense a little bit, as they were on the field more, as they did have the lead, you did see some success there. With him running the ball in an actual productive forward direction. So if that can happen, yeah, they just weren't in that position a lot last year. And, of course, they didn't have Abdullah. They think highly of him, and they're going to give him a chance to be the number one. And so far they're fairly happy with what they've seen, but I'm sure they'd like to see more too.
Yeah, for sure. And they definitely invested in the offensive line this offseason in terms of creating, you know, running lanes for him and signing TJ Lang, signing Ricky Wagner, and really improving the right side of that offensive line. Still a question mark with Greg Robinson on the left side filling in for the injured Taylor Decker. Robinson, of course, struggled with the Rams, a couple holding penalties. I believe last week, or certainly plays where he was looking like he was a little overmatched on the left side. So
yeah, but
we'll see what happens.
Like, that wasn't obviously part of the plan, the Decker injury.
Yeah.
So, but there, you know, TJ Lang is a helper in pass protection at the guard position, and you know, Wagner holds up on the right side. So what we were talking about with the Giants, right? Like, he can't help everywhere. The Lions can help.
True.
Greg Robinson, because they're pretty solid at those other positions. So I think that's an important thing to think about. And obviously, yeah, you'd like Robinson to be in a position where he can win one-on-one against top pass rushers, but I don't think that's going to happen, and they're going to have to figure out a way to handle that.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of Ziggy Ansah and his short-term, long-term future, it looked like he, you know, he had a couple sacks last week, looked like a certainly an impactful player, certainly like his old self, but only playing 47% of the snaps so far. And I wonder, again, how much of that is going up against Ereck Flowers versus Ansah being 100%.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, right? Is their defensive line rotation deep enough that they can sustain a pass rush? You know, how do you deploy Ziggy Ansah? The correct way to do it on Monday was deploy him early against Flowers and totally demoralize Flowers and the Giants offense so you're in control of the game. It may be that there are games, game plans, and game flows that necessitate holding Ansah out until later when you're trying to put the game away or you know, control it in the fourth quarter with your pass rush. So it doesn't seem like he's a guy that they want to play a whole lot more than they have so far. And so the question becomes, who else do they have to rotate in there, and can they control the game up front with those other guys while sort of looking for opportunities to get Ansah in there where he can sort of wreck the game the way he did Monday? So putting things together up front, I think it still remains a question mark, but obviously what we saw from Ansah was, you know, is there someone on that defensive line that can be a game wrecker? He sort of put his hand up there, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. And there is a opportunity, perhaps, with the Atlanta offensive line. I know Ansah was going up against Ereck Flowers at left tackle last week, but they may not have Ryan Schrader, who's out, or you know, left the Giants game, or not the Giants game, but left the Packers game last week with a concussion. It may not be ready, I believe, for this week. So you talked about that offensive line playing all 80 games last year. The five guys they had started all 16 games. Chris Chester, of course, retired. Or did he retire? I know he's not. He's certainly not playing.
I believe he did retire. Yes.
Yeah. So he kind of did that thing where he retired, and then so if Schrader's out for this game, then suddenly you do have injury concerns. You are going to see a weak spot. Tyson Barella would probably step in and play tackle for the Falcons, I should say, in this game. So that would be a concern. I wonder if they will try and get Ansah matched up on that left side of the defense, right side of the offense, and try and take advantage of the what might be the weak link and the weak side of the Atlanta offensive line.
Yeah, I think if you're Detroit, that's how you have to play it, because I don't think, you know, it's not like the defensive line, for instance, that the Giants have or the Chargers have, where, you know, you have bookend guys that you don't have to move around. I think if you're the Lions, you do want to find your matchups and find ways to exploit and win those, because I don't think personnel-wise they have that kind of defensive front that they can count on to dominate on its own. So it'll be interesting to watch. If they can generate a consistent pass rush, I think they become a legitimate threat in the NFC.
Now, you're coming off of an 11-5 week in the ESPN NFL Pick
Giants,
Center.
I thought the Giants would finish that off for me. 12-4 would have looked really nice. But yeah, and you know what? I also picked the Vikings before I realized Bradford wasn't going to play. So that I was certainly would have gone with the Steelers had I had that. So it could have been even better. You know, we're never satisfied here.
But you're going Falcons this week, I take it.
I could look up the email I sent. I assume I took the Falcons this week. Yes.
Does that speak to perhaps the level of the strenuous nature of your prediction process when it comes to the weekly picks?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on it. It's one of the most important things I do. I'm really happy that it's a way people like to judge my work, because it involves a lot more intense preparation and work than anything else I do throughout the week. And none of that is true. I think people get too hung up on these predictions. People take it as if I pick the Falcons, oh, you must not like the Lions. I don't have anything against the Lions. I just think they're not going to win the game. But that's okay. That doesn't mean that I think they stink. I did pick the Falcons this week. So Lions fans, you know. Come after me.
Well, you gave them permission, so now they have to. We're going to try and build some cover for you on Twitter while we head to this break. We'll be back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. First, gosh, you know, NFL season's in full swing now. A couple weeks into the year, some teams are pretty exciting to come see come to your town. Steelers, hey, listen, Bears fans don't have a lot to root for at home, but seeing Antonio Brown, it's pretty cool. Falcons, of course, 2-0, off to a hot start. If you're a Lions fan, your team is 2-0, you're excited about that. Get tickets to that game, perhaps. If you're a Bills fan, you can see the Broncos, see Trevor Siemian. That seems pretty cool. If you are a Colts fan, it's not going to be that hard to get tickets. Maybe you want to sell your tickets, for example. If you want to buy tickets to that game or any other game in the NFL this upcoming week or any other point during the season or any sport for that matter, you know where to go. But just in case you need a reminder, you can go to SeatGeek. Of course, SeatGeek does an incredible job. They aggregate tickets from all over the web. They use their deal score technology to rate all the tickets, so you know you're getting a really solid deal. You're not getting scammed. You're not getting a ticket that's overpriced. You're getting the best possible deal for the tickets you are deciding to buy to go see Case Keenum or Trevor Siemian or Jacoby Brissett in person, or hopefully, if you're going to do this, better quarterbacks than that. But SeatGeek's not going to judge you. They're not going to report on what quarterbacks you're interested in. They want you to get the best tickets, and that's all they care about. I may make fun of you, but I would never do that. So if you want a good deal, you can go to SeatGeek. Just buy tickets. It's a good deal on its own. But if you want to get an even better deal, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do to make that happen, just download the SeatGeek app and enter in my promo code, which is Barnwell, Barnwell. Just use that promo code Barnwell, and you'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. If you're going to that Colts game, that's going to cover a good chunk of the ticket cost. If you are going to see Chiefs Chargers, that may cover pretty much the entire thing. So instead of getting a great deal, get an even better deal by going to SeatGeek, going to the app, and using promo code Barnwell today. All right, welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I'm joined by Dan Graziano of ESPN to also talk about week 3 of the NFL season. We have a couple more games to get to before we finish up today. Let's get to one of the hottest teams in football, off to a hot start so far this year, the Oakland Raiders, who are 2-0. And granted, of course, one of their wins was against the New York Jets, who are going to make a lot of teams look hot over the course of the season, but league-high 71 points. They've outscored their opposition by 35 points. They are doing something right, for sure. They're playing Washington this week. So in terms of Oakland, in terms of their big additions this offseason, the most notable one, fair to say, Marshawn Lynch, he has not been... It's been interesting. You know, he hasn't really been like a workhorse back for them. He's been kind of a guy who's going to get a few series during the game and maybe close things out when things are close, but they're not going to... They don't seem to be desperately interested in kind of giving him that huge workload he had in Seattle, where he was getting 300 carries a year. He's got 15 carries a game so far on pace for, I can do math in my head really fast, 240 carries, which is way down from his normal workload. So do you think that is going to be the case over the course of the season, or do you see his role perhaps expanding as he kind of gets in the swing of things?
I know that they like their other running backs, but they don't like either of them as kind of, you know, the kind that can do damage to an opposing defense physically over the course of a game. So there may be games where they have to lean more on Marshawn Lynch and his physicality. But I think they're also going to look for opportunities to not do that because they want to have him all year. Mm-hmm. And they recognize where he is at this point in his career. I don't think they're going to be able to grind him between the tackles the way Seattle used to. I'm scrolling back through old texts, and this is from a member of their coaching staff when they signed Lynch and asked what about him that they liked. Downhill decisive runner that keeps us ahead of the chains, gets what is there and falls forward, makes loaded box defenses less intimidating to run into because he can break arm tackles. Big impact on the play action passing game because safeties and linebackers want to fit faster so he doesn't get ahead of steam. Brings a nastiness and venom to the backfield. Right now that room is young guys and soft-spoken. Another guy who's won a championship. So that gives you some sense of what the Raiders were thinking when they added him. And in terms of what his role will be, I think they really believe that offense has a lot of options. Talking to this same exact person a couple days ago about the way the offense has started, they said to me, you know, and Jared Cook hasn't even gotten going yet. They have plans for him as a downfield target. They think he's a helper in the run game as well as a blocker, say, you know, a big effort guy in the run game. So I think this is an offense that really believes it has a lot of different ways it can go and can design game plans and alter them based on what they see from opposing defenses. And you might have a week where they do run Marshawn Lynch a lot. You might have a week where they don't because Michael Crabtree's matchup is great. So I think they really do see themselves as an offense that can do a lot of different things and attack you a lot of different ways. And I think they're going to have to be, because I do think there are still a lot of questions on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm. That was a very verbose text. That was really impressive.
Yeah, this guy's real good. Real good source.
I was going to say. Yeah, most of the texts I get from people in the league are just, yes, no, LOL.
Yeah. No, that's good.
That's good.
He gets what I'm after. So
I like he wants those meaty podcast quotes. That makes total sense to me. I don't think there's a real benefit to burning out Lynch now. You figure this is a team that, who knows what will happen over the next 14 weeks. If Derek Carr gets hurt, they're going to be in trouble, of course. The defense still has some question marks. But a team that you figure they're earmarked for the postseason. They are thinking about things with the bigger picture in mind in terms of being healthy and having their guys ready for January. And it certainly seems like with Marshawn Lynch, that's the prudent thing to do, is not necessarily go out and give him those 30 carries, but you may want him for 30 carries, you know, against the Chiefs in January. So I think it does make sense for them to, you know, have the threat of Lynch. He certainly can be on the field a fair amount, but I don't think they need to give him a huge workload. And I think Jalen Richard is a super underrated player. Probably not an every down guy, but someone who in like that secondary role, I just think he's perfect for that spot.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to sit on the sideline and watch Marshawn Lynch. I think they have plays for him. That's kind of what I was getting at, and I think that there are there are things they plan to do with him and things they plan to do with Lynch. I mean, in terms of them setting themselves up for January, I mean, I agree that they're that good a team, but you know, they're not the Patriots where they're in a division where nobody's going to push them. I mean, this is, you know, the Chiefs are going to be very, very difficult. The Broncos look like they're back to being very, very difficult, and the Chargers, until they shoot themselves in the foot in the fourth quarter, are a very difficult team to play. So I think if you're the Raiders, yeah, you can make those kinds of plans, but I don't think you can assume it's going to be easy getting there. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I that's fair. Teams have a very inflated opinion, perhaps not unwarranted in some cases, but I think this is a team where at the very least they envision themselves as a postseason team.
I think they're a team with a great deal of confidence in themselves. Yes. I would agree with that.
Do you think, and this is, they're off to a hot start, really Michael Crabtree's off to a hot start, but do you think that Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree have a credible case for being the best 1-2 in terms of wideouts in football right now?
Yeah, I think so, because I don't know that, is there another two that is as productive as Crabtree, assuming Crabtree's the two?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else. I think Mohamed Sanu is off to a nice start in Atlanta, but you definitely wouldn't put those two there at this point.
Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant, maybe.
Right, but let's see it from Martavis for a little way. He looked awfully good on Sunday, obviously. Yeah. Obviously, Brandon Marshall not going yet in New York, as we've discussed. So, I mean, that name-wise, Odell Beckham and Brandon Marshall could be that. I'm trying to think where else we would look
maybe
for.
Maybe Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders if they're going. But
kind of both sort of like kind of a couple of real nice 1A types, right? Like you wouldn't necessarily take either over Cooper or Julio Jones or Odell Beckham.
Right.
But, I think that's for what the Broncos do, they certainly fit very nicely.
Yeah, and I just think that, you know, in terms of their production, in terms of not having a way to switch off, you know, on defense, you can't hide a cornerback against these Raiders, where you saw in week one where they had Adoree Jackson making his NFL debut, and I thought he did a pretty decent job, to be honest, but every single play, you know, that was, well, not every single play, maybe that's an exaggeration, but the vast majority of plays, whether it was Cooper, whether it was Crabtree, that's who the Raiders wanted to attack, and they attacked him over and over and over again. So I do think that as long as those guys can stay healthy, and that's always a concern, especially with Crabtree, who has that history of injury, of serious injury, I mean, they're such a good combination and so hard to really defend. And so few teams in the league have two really good cornerbacks. When you think about Washington, sure, you have Josh Norman. And Bashaud Breeland is a little better than perhaps he looked last season. But Josh Norman is obviously going to be the focal point of their coverage. And so I wonder, do you think, given that they didn't move him around in week one when the Eagles had Alshon Jeffrey and they had talked about maybe shadowing Jeffrey with Norman, didn't end up doing him, do you think that you can do that and have him shadow Amari Cooper, or do you just kind of have to play sides and just have to hope that, you know, Breeland holds up against Cooper or Crabtree?
Without knowing what Washington's game plan is going to be, I would think that sides is the way to go here, because I think, you know, you get Norman in a position where he's one-on-one with a guy. We've seen that, especially, if, you know, if it's a guy that wants to chirp back at him. Mm-hmm. We've seen that be a potential trouble spot for him. So I think they'll probably keep, because, you know, it's a pick your poison situation. Why not play sides and and make the offense tell you what they think of you, and then figure out the game as it goes from there. But yeah, they're gonna have a hard time. And again, especially like, even if those two guys play well, you know, the Raiders believe they can use Jared Cook in the passing game, and they believe they can run the ball and do different things with their running backs. So it's a tough challenge for Washington.
Yeah. So with Washington last week, I kind of mentioned, I went on Sports Center with Scott Van Pelt. We talked about Washington last week and how that was kind of a must-win game for them. Not because you're going to lose your season starting 0-2, but you look at their schedule. Had the Eagles in week one, they lost. They got outplayed. Oh, it was close for most of the game. I think the Eagles kind of pulled away towards the end. But they have the Raiders coming this week. They're at Kansas City in week four before their bye. You don't want to go into your bye 0-4. It's a really bad omen. I think one team in league history has made the playoffs after starting 0-4. So you get that win against the Rams. You know, you're happy to have banked that. It was a closer game than maybe you would have hoped for, but happy to have that in your back pocket. Now you're thinking about, can we really credibly beat the Raiders on Sunday Night Football? And it's going to be a really tough sell. I mean, they're going to lose Mason Foster, who had the game-sealing interception, I believe, last week, has a dislocated shoulder. Then he caught the interception with a dislocated shoulder, right? That seems insane, but yeah, it did happen from what I remember.
He was playing. He had popped the shoulder back in, so I guess it was no longer dislocated at that time.
It was located.
He had relocated it, but that's called a reduction, as I understand
it,
when you put the dislocated shoulder back in. It's a little... well, medical term. You know, we're trying to get everybody as educated as possible on a variety of fronts here, who's listening. But but he's dealing with the residual soreness that comes from that, obviously, and the instability. But that's a team that has questions up front to begin with. I mean, I know they were still sorting out defensive line roles as late August and early September. So there are ways you can attack Washington up front, even if Breland and Norman are going to play well on the back end.
Yeah, and so I think that's the concern. I wonder if it does kind of make sense for the Raiders to go more run heavy and really try and use that great offensive line and Marshawn Lynch to try and attack, you know, a front seven that has injury concerns, that's still a work in progress with, you know, like you said, different guys filling out different roles. And from the flip side, with Washington, their running game might be a concern as well.
It might. Interesting to see Rob Kelly back at practice yesterday because, you know, with a rib fracture, they called it a rib injury. There was reported as a fracture. You know, you would think he'd need some time, but I don't know. Rob Kelly, tough guy. You don't want Samaje Perine to be taking your job. Maybe he's in a hurry to get back out there and play. So it'll be interesting to see what he's able to do. I'm sure they'll put some protection on him while he plays with that rib issue, and I wonder if that limits him. But they have something in that Chris Thompson. They really like him in the passing game, and as a dynamic guy once he gets out in space. I just think the offense isn't going to look right until it really has Jordan Reed, and he hasn't been healthy. And big, you know, stop the presses. Jordan Reed hasn't been healthy, and he just, even when he's been on the field, he doesn't look like himself. And I think he's such an integral part of what they want to do on offense. That is just not going to look like Terrell Pryor will get there in terms of chemistry with Kirk Cousins. Speaking of chemistry, they changed play callers too. Sean McVay left to coach the Rams, and now Jay Gruden is calling the plays. So there's some, you know, Cousins the last 2 years has had McVay in his ear on game days, and as we discussed with the Falcons, when there's a change there, there are issues. So I think there are reasons to think that this Washington offense will improve as the season goes along, but the run game is important to them. I don't think they believe Perine is all the way there yet in terms of what they can count on from him. They saw from Rob Kelly last year that he can do enough in the run game that they can operate their passing game the way they want to. And if he's able to play, I think that matters a lot. But Reed is the key guy, and he's the guy to watch all week, and it seems like he's on the injury report every week, all year, every year.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers with... you talked just long enough for me to grab the Jordan Reed numbers. It was incredible. You couldn't have done a better job if you were trying in terms of
getting the Jordan Reed numbers.
So good. Over the last couple of years, I mean, Kirk Cousins' numbers with Jordan Reed, pretty drastic in terms of on-field, off-field numbers. With Jordan Reed on the field, Kirk Cousins, 44 touchdowns, 11 picks, 105 passer rating, 72.7 QBR. With Jordan Reed off the field, 12 touchdowns, 13 picks, so more interceptions than touchdowns, 85.4 passer rating, 59.8 QBR. And Jordan Reed, who is on the field right now, yes, he's a guy who's played through injuries in the past. He's incredibly tough. No one's saying he's not a tough player, but just he gets really easily beat up. He just gets hit really hard. He doesn't, you know, whether he just doesn't. Some guys, tight end's just a tough position. Every tight end. Who was talking about this week, actually, in terms of Tyler Eifert? Catherine Torello, who writes about the Bengals for us, was talking about Tyler Eifert, and just the injury rate of tight ends is so high. And so with Reed, I mean, it's not just that he has the sternum injury, it's also his toe. I mean, a toe that he's playing through that's in pain and it hasn't really ever healed. So I wonder if there does come a point, whether it's, you know, right after the bye when they play San Francisco, whether they give him a week, you know, kind of a 2-week stretch or a 3-week stretch where he does just have to rest and play because they need him over the course of the season. And right now, even though he has 11 catches, even though he's leading the team in receptions, he has 84 yards. He's averaging 7.6 yards per reception. I mean, he is such an explosive player when he's healthy and such a threat in the red zone that this just isn't the same sort of player.
Yeah, and it has an effect throughout the offense. And he's a guy, you know, they've had so much trouble in the red zone the last couple of years. He's a guy they like to use down there. They're doing weird things down there. When I was in their camp, I talked to Josh Doctson, and I asked him, like, what he could bring to the offense, and he gave an oddly specific answer. He said, well, I really think I can help on those fade routes in the end zone. Like I didn't expect that part of the game plan as the answer, but yeah, they really feel like they can get, you know, mismatches down there with him, and you can see them trying to force it. But I obviously, if Reed is a factor, especially in close, I think that changes everything and allows them to do a lot more different things, make maybe some different choices.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have a pick in this game?
Well, I picked them all. let's see. I picked the Raiders in this game. Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I think I just think that it's a tough matchup for Washington where they are right now in terms of injuries and in terms of their personnel. Just Oakland looks a better team than they did last year. Last year, they were a team that was, they were sort of like a supercharged version of the Lions, like where they were a really good team. They were a good team, but they also were incredibly lucky, had a lot of fourth quarter comebacks. This year, they look like just a straight up better football team.
Remember last year in week one, Del Rio went for it on fourth down in a key part of the fourth quarter. And yeah, so they were kind of, he was trying to, you know, convince them they were good, and I think he did a good job with that. And I think, as we talked about earlier, they're a team with a lot of confidence.
All right, Dan, we're going to come back with talk about one more game, Bucks-Vikings, in a second. But first, just wanted to talk about our pals at ZipRecruiter. It's a tough situation out there if you're an NFL team. I don't know if you know this, but the Bengals fired their offensive coordinator this week. A lot of teams looking at some possible changes. It's been a pretty ugly start for some teams. The Giants, we talked about a little earlier, are in a bit of a grind. They can't really necessarily go out and trade for a left tackle, but they may be better off just posting an ad for that left tackle spot on ZipRecruiter, because God knows, if you can get good candidates from anywhere, you can get good candidates on ZipRecruiter. Because if you post your job on ZipRecruiter, whether you're the Giants, whether it's your business, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Jerry Reese is not going to be there for hours customizing the left tackle spot for all these different sites. He needs to do it with one single click. And with ZipRecruiter, you can do that. And then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. Better than a giant scouting department? Perhaps. I'm not going to say that that's not going to be the case. And in fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day. When you have to get a left tackle for next week, that is a pretty quick turnaround. So it's very exciting to see ZipRecruiter get that kind of return as quickly as you might get. And even better, you know, budgets are kind of tough during the middle of the season. You've spent a lot of the money already on wide receivers who may not be very effective at their jobs anymore. You can use ZipRecruiter for free today if you're a listener to this podcast. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, and you can post your job on ZipRecruiter for free. Again, 100-plus job sites, one click, 80% of employers get a qualified candidate within one day. And now you can do it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. So let's finish up. One more game to get to. Let's talk about Bucks-Vikings, a team that Vikings looked incredible in week one, not so much in week two without Sam Bradford. So where do you think the Sam Bradford situation lies currently at the moment?
I feel like we should do like two versions of this portion of the podcast, one that assumes Bradford plays and one doesn't, because the story of the game is totally different either way. My understanding on Bradford's knee is it's really going to be the kind of thing where they have to evaluate it as the week goes along. Mm-hmm. So beginning of the week, I was exchanging texts with somebody on this and was told nothing new on the knee, hope to see improvement this week. And indications from Minnesota are that they have and that they're optimistic. But, you know, this time last week, they weren't sure. And it may be that they have to work him out on the field on Sunday before the game. and see. They were not convinced Sunday that he could effectively protect himself in the pocket. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not a mobile guy, but you got to move around a little bit. And they felt like he was going to be too limited and that he was putting himself in harm's way if he played. So they sat him. They could make the same decision Sunday. They could make a different decision Sunday. And that's a tough place to be when I just think there's a serious drop off. To Case Keenum because, you know, Bradford, I know Bradford doesn't dazzle anybody, but, you know, when he's been with Pat Shurmur, he's been effective. Mm-hmm. He knows what they want him to do. Their receiving core is kind of not bad, you know? Right. I mean, I think of the guys people are getting to know a little bit, Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. But, you know, I think when he's in there, it's an offense that has an opportunity to operate at maybe a little higher level than we've come to expect. Mm-hmm. And when he's not, I think it's going to be very difficult for them to move the ball.
Yeah, I'm someone who's been very skeptical of Sam Bradford in years past, and I think that the offense was a bit of a mess last year, but it wasn't Bradford's fault. I think that it was really the horrific offensive line they had assembled last year, and just it would have been impossible for just about anybody
back there. That offensive line fell apart on them last year. I mean, multiple injuries at tackle positions, and sure. Then they were left with backups. Remember, they were 5-0, and looking like, you know, oh, can the Vikings reach the Super Bowl? And then even make the playoffs, so... You know, the tackle play has to be adequate, and so far it has been, because mm-hmm. Bradford will get rid of the ball quick, and you know, he'll make smart decisions, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think the offense is going to be different if he's not. And it's a real hot take right there. If the starting quarterback's not playing, the offense will be affected.
Well, that's what you're here for, those mm-hmm. hot takes. And I mean, it's such an interesting question over the course of, you know, over the course of the week, for example, because what do you do in practice? I mean, if Bradford's not going to practice, you have Case Keenum working with the ones all week, and then he might not even play on Sunday. We have no idea. And then on top of that, the big picture coming later on after the season is that you have Sam Bradford as an unrestricted free agent. You have Teddy Bridgewater potentially as an unrestricted free agent. I mean, I don't know what you do in terms of committing, you know, in your quarterback situation, where usually if you're a team, you want to have a plan. You know, even if you don't have the guy, you want to know that, okay, we're going shopping this offseason. We're going to scout quarterbacks thinking we're going to take a guy in the first round next year. You want to have like a vision of what you're going to do. And it looks like, you know, with the Vikings, it's almost just a wait and see proposition in terms of the health of their various quarterbacks.
It really is. And that's a decision they made. I mean, you know, Bradford certainly would have engaged them in contract extension talks this past offseason had they wanted to. But they don't. They want to assess where Bridgewater is from a health standpoint come December and January and February and March. And they want to see how Bradford plays this year. And they feel like, you know, they're in a position where it's not – these guys aren't – you know, these guys are unrestricted free agents, but they'll have first crack at either or both. So they'll be able to decide in January or February what the priorities are, what the decision is, and then maybe jump them – you know, if they want to keep Sam Bradford off the market, they'll have an opportunity to do that. Same with Bridgewater. So, but it is a weird position to be in. They've sort of consciously gone into this season without a long-term plan at quarterback, mm-hmm. Thinking that they're, the two possibilities are decent, and that, you know, the rest of the quarterback market next March, this is kind of getting a little farther afield of game previews, but, you know, it's interesting. I mean, Kirk Cousins is going to be out there. Drew Brees is going to be out. I mean, like, there's not, you know, there are some interesting possibilities at quarterback, and of course everybody's excited about the ones in the draft. But yeah, the Vikings are definitely looking at this year at the quarterback position and waiting to see how Bradford plays and how Teddy Bridgewater's knee is coming back together by the time the season ends.
Yeah, so it seems like, you know, just from reading the tea leaves and sort of listening to what people were saying last week, it seemed like there was an expectation that Bradford wasn't 100%, you know, kind of was taking some time off, but he was going to play on Sunday. And so I think in the back of their mind, at least they were preparing to some extent like that Bradford was going to be involved on Sunday. And then it didn't happen. They got blitzed by the Steelers. Just wasn't an impressive performance whatsoever. The Vikings were a mess on offense for most of that game. Now you're going into this game against the Bucs, who looked very impressive in week two against the Bears this weekend. Do you think there's going to be changes in terms of how Minnesota approaches this game on offense?
Yeah, I think at this point you go through the week preparing, at least maybe doing something you can to prepare Keenum to play, and that's a big part of it. But, you know, I think on offense what we've seen from the Vikings the last couple of years since Zimmer's been the coach, they play this slow-down style. You know, they're not at or near the top of the league in terms of offensive plays run per game. They're mm-hmm. toward the bottom. And I think you'll see them trend that way. They really like the young running back, Dalvin Cook. And they like Latavius Murray, too. They feel like they're equipped to run the ball if that's all they're going to do. Mm-hmm. The question is, you know, are the Bucks a team you can do that against? I saw Gerald McCoy miss practice on Wednesday, so that might be something to watch. But up front, the Buccaneers feel like they're pretty strong, and they might be a difficult team, especially if you're going to go one-dimensional. So that's where I see the problem. Unless you have something you're going to do with Keenum in the passing game that we haven't seen, which I can't imagine that there is such a thing. The Rams would have probably tried, wanted to know what it was last year. You know, I think if you're the Buccaneers, you can go into this, if Bradford's not on the field, thinking, hey, we'll take away the run and try and make Keenum beat us, and that might not be a bad way to go.
Yeah, I'm going to blame him on that one. I mean, McCoy, it looks like he's going to play. He practiced, I think, to some extent today from what I can tell. Okay. I think there's getting early reports on that now as we record this. Quan Alexander is probably going to play. I think he's saying he's going to play, even though he hasn't been practicing. I think he was supposed to be in practice already and hasn't made it back. So who knows? He may end up not playing. That could be a place where maybe Kyle Rudolph has some success. But it does seem like they're going to have to run the football well to kind of win this game. And I don't know if they're going to be able to. I think the Bucs defense, especially, you know, granted it was Mike Glennon, and we can make jokes about Mike Glennon. Maybe we will make jokes about Mike Glennon if it comes to that. But certainly looked very good against the Bears in week two, I should say, not week one.
Yeah, and they like the defense. You know, they added T.J. Ward there at the end after the Broncos cut him, and I talked to somebody there and said, you know, we really felt like we had big-time difference makers at the first two levels of the defense.
Yeah.
But while we liked our safety group, we didn't feel like we had that big-time guy in that position group, and Ward gives us that.
Right.
And so, you know, he helps in a variety of ways. So I think, yeah, and you mentioned Quan Alexander. They like their depth at linebacker. You know, I mean, they feel like they have some young guys in there that are going to be difference makers. So I'm interested to see this team. Look, very strange start to the season, obviously, with the first game being canceled or postponed because of the hurricane. So they must have been really fired up to play last week. They had to wait an extra week longer than everybody else did. The Bears are not, I don't think, going to be a major obstacle for most teams this year.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm interested to see how it goes. Kendall Beckwith is the rookie linebacker that they really like a lot. And Devontae Bond, another young guy that they drafted late last year. So they feel like they have some coverage there if Alexander's out. But long term, I'm interested to see. This is, I mean, Atlanta obviously looks like they're going to be good. Carolina, I think, bounces back. Very tough division. And none of these teams play each other for a while. I don't think they play each other until later on in October. So interesting race brewing there. And I think by the time we get to around Halloween time, we'll have some sense of whether the Bucs are a legitimate threat to make it a three-way race.
So what do you think? I mean, in the long term, obviously we have one game's worth of data. So this is aggressive question, or a tough ask. But do you think that they, in the long run, they are a team that's going to be in contention for, if not necessarily the division title, at least a serious shot at the wild card berth in 2017?
I'd really like to know before answering that question, like what third year step Jameis Winston makes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do his interceptions come down? You know, if the answer to that question is yes, then my answer is a enthusiastic yes, because I think, you know, they have all the pieces. The offensive line, a little bit of a question. That they're a little bit bigger and fatter on the interior this year. I don't know if the tackles are all the way there yet, but I don't think they're at a point where I put them with Atlanta. I think Atlanta would have to take a step back. But, you know, every year there's somebody that kind of comes out of nowhere. They were sort of that team last year, almost got to the playoffs. So, yeah, I think they're close. I think they could be a contending team, but I think there are still a lot of questions they need to answer before we know for sure.
Yeah, and I think it would help Jameis Winston if the running game is working. And that,
yeah, Doug Martin coming back in a couple of weeks.
That's the thing. It kind of feels like they're in a holding pattern. I thought Jaquizz Rodgers did a totally decent job against the Bears, but I do agree the offensive line might be a concern. You think about, you know, the Bears have a good front seven. I think the one part about the Bears I would put stock in is they do a very solid front seven, especially their pass rushers, and they did give the tackles a bit of a fit last week in terms of getting after Jameis Winston, pressuring him, taking him down. So you would hope that they kind of figure out the offensive line. Jarius Sweezy is penciled in at one guard spot after missing all of last season. The Bucs rotated Kevin Pemphile and Evan Smith, not 50-50, but closer than it might sound in week two at the other guard spot. So I don't know if that's going to work. I do think it's going to be an interesting spot for them, given how good the Vikings front seven and how good especially their defensive line is at getting pressure on the interior. So this is a big ask. I mean, this could be a game where the Vikings could dominate with their defensive line alone, which is something Giants fans know all about in terms of the Vikings taking over games at times. So it could absolutely be that kind of situation. So I'll be intrigued to see if the Bucs offensive line can actually hold up.
Yeah, I don't think this is the week against Linval Joseph and his crew to get the run game going. Mm-hmm. Interested to see what happens with Doug Martin, because Jason Light, their GM, told me in camp, like, we like where Doug Martin is right now, but the first three games of the season, it's not crazy to think somebody could take his job, and mm-hmm. it wouldn't be there for him when he got back. So I think they're trying to motivate him and keep him hungry, and I think if they feel like if they do that, he's going to be productive for them.
Interesting. Do you have a pick for this game?
Yeah, again, I'm sure I do. Yes, the pick I sent in was Vikings asterisk, and obviously the asterisk is the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. So if it's
Keenum, would I change to Tampa Bay? I think I was kind of reserving the right to do that.
But would you?
That's a good question. I think I would. I think if it goes to Keenum, I would pick Tampa Bay. I think it has that much of an effect. I think the Vikings were a very, very confident offense in week one with Bradford. And I think obviously without him there, I think that has an effect on the offense enough to a talented young team like the Buccaneers can jump up and get him. How about you?
That's a good question. I like Vikings. I'm going to go Vikings either way.
Even if.
And I like Case Keenum. I think in terms of if he's your emergency, third string in some cases, second string in some cases, quarterback, you could be worse off. I'm not saying he's good. Not saying he's good by any means. But I think he is. He at least is passable as opposed to some other backup quarterbacks around the league. I'd rather have him than Ryan Fitzpatrick, I would say, to be honest with you, in terms of the thinking of the backup on the other side of the field. So I think if they can run the ball effectively, which I think if McCoy's at 100%, maybe they have a shot at running the football. I think that could work. I think that the front seven is really going to give the Bucs offensive line a lot of trouble. The more I talked about it, the more in my head I'm like, I don't know about this Bucs offensive line holding up. So I could see a game where they do force some mistakes out of Jameis Winston, where they do maybe run the ball reasonably well and kind of hold up that way. But I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not good at picking games. That's why I'm not on the picks list. Yeah. I would never.
You're not part of that crew?
I feel like I would go, I'd be sub 500 the first year and I'd lose my job because of it. They'd be like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Get rid of him. Come on.
If our jobs are tied to the picks, then I want out.
Hope they're not.
I don't think that's because you get that, right? You get that. Like, this guy should be fired for his bad picks. Like, no, I hope not. I hope not. That's not part of the deal.
There are plenty of good reasons to fire me. That is not one of them. That is not one of them. Well, Dan, thank you so much for finally coming on the show. I've been meaning to have you on for a while. This is great. I'm sure we'll have you back on later on in the season. But where can people check out more of what you're doing?
I mean, I'm on ESPN.com regularly. We wrote a story today. Thursday about Jared Goff and the Rams and his ability to the situation he's in versus the one he was in last year. A little pregame Thursday night football reading for anybody who wants it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be on I'm on Sunday NFL Countdown pretty regularly now out of games. I'm on NFL Live and SportsCenter throughout the week. It's almost impossible at this point to avoid me.
That's how I feel about Mina Kimes, our regular guest
on the
show.
Oh, yeah, right. Exactly.
Well.
I think she's like, I'm looking at a TV now. I'm surprised she's not on one of them.
I'm always surprised she's on TV. But then. Thank you so much. Like again, I'll have you back on later on in the year talking about more NFL, but really appreciate you stopping by.
My pleasure, Bill. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much to Dan Graziano of ESPN for hopping on the show today. We are going to come back next week. Next Monday, we'll have another exciting episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. And, of course, Nickel Package in midweek on Wednesday. I'll be hopping on again. But more Bill Barnwell Show, more Nickel Package, more audio coming to you about the NFL next week.